I'm speaking with Professor Gretchen Minton of Montana State University. Professor Minton, you've adapted Shakespeare's play, Timon of Athens, to Timon of Anaconda, and set it in 1960s and 70s Butte. Can you tell us briefly how this project came about? How did you decide on working with this play, this setting? How did that whole thing develop, and over what span of time have you been thinking or working on this?
Yes, absolutely. It's funny when you work on plays and work on Shakespeare, sometimes people might think, oh, this is an idea you had just a year or so ago. My history with Timon of Athens goes a long ways back, because the first book I ever published was an edition of Timon of Athens for a publishing company called Arden Shakespeare. So I always tell people, when you look at the scholarly editions of Shakespeare's play and they're like four lines of text and all the rest footnotes, It's one of those editions. So I co-edited this edition of Timon of Athens, which came out in 2008. And so it was a play I worked with a while back and for a long time. And after that, I kind of put the play away and thought, I've had enough of that play, and I've been doing many other projects since then. But in recent years, when I've become more and more interested in becoming involved in live theatrical productions of Shakespeare, especially how we can speak to contemporary environmental concerns through adaptations of Shakespeare, I kept coming back to Timon and thinking there was a lot of language in this play that speaks to our relationship to our natural world, to the animal world, and really talks a lot about our tendency to destroy the earth in trying to preserve ourselves. So I thought that this would be an excellent opportunity to return to the play and to do an adaptation and to stage it and use this as a way to get people into conversations about contemporary and past environmental problems in Montana.
I haven't read your play. I don't know if it's even available, but I'm very curious about the language of your adaptation. Is it close to the original with a few changes of names, or do you add or remove characters? How Shakespearean is it versus how Mintonian, perhaps?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And I should say, in the interest of being accurate, one of the interesting things about Timon of Athens, of course, when you mention Shakespearean plays, this play is not one that comes to people's minds. It's a play that a lot of people haven't read, most people have not even heard of. And it's short and unusual for a Shakespearean play. And one of the reasons it's unusual is because Shakespeare wrote about two-thirds of it, and the other third he wrote in collaboration with his contemporary Thomas Middleton. And so there are also two different voices in that play to begin with that are sometimes, I think, at odds with one another. Hmm. And so I took that script of this original play that was written in 1606, and in my adaptation, the short answer is yes, it's mostly the original language. I love early modern English. I love the language of Shakespeare and his contemporaries. The syntax, the difficult metaphors, the challenging moments in the language that really make you lean in and think hard. I love that about Shakespearean texts. So I didn't want to do away with that. So what I did is I shortened the play. I cut out some of the characters. I collapsed a lot of the characters into one actor playing what in the original might be three or four different characters. And I did change some place names. So in the adaptation, people are going to hear Butte, Anaconda, Montana, and they're also going to have character names that in the original are odd names, such as Lucilius, Lucullus Ventidius, you know, these sort of odd classical names. And now in my adaptation, they become Daly, Clark, Heinze, Franke, Joseph, things that have more immediate connection to Butte. And then in the other moments, I do occasionally change words to highlight my environmental themes, and also so that people don't have too much trouble accessing the language. But really, for the most part, I'm trying to stay true to the spirit of the original.
Mm-hmm. Have you done an adaptation like this before, or have you used this as a technique maybe in the classroom with students to get into the play and the language by doing adaptations?
Well, really, this is the first full-scale project of this kind that I've done, but I have flirted with this idea in the past. So I'm the dramaturg for Montana Shakespeare in the Parks, and I did the script cut this year for Henry IV, part one. So I'm used to cutting scripts and thinking about streamlining characters and working through difficult or messy places in a play that the audience might not be able to understand. I've also, I worked with Shakespeare in the Parks production of Macbeth in 2017 that had an environmental theme. And I helped the director and designers through that concept, and we all together tried to work with this notion of what might Montana look like in the future if society were to collapse because of a climate change catastrophe. So I've been working a little bit with adaptations in that sense. And I've also asked my graduate students in the past to come up with production concepts where they would imagine, okay, if I took a play and I set it in a particular place in order to highlight ecological problems, what would that look like? So I have them think through this, but I've never asked them to do a full-scale script or adaptation. And this is the first time I've done it too. So I started this process nearly a year ago with cutting the script and working through it. And I workshopped it with two different groups of actors last fall. I talked through them what was working, what was not working. I then wrote a paper about it and discussed it with colleagues at the Shakespeare Association of America and got their feedback. And then this summer, as I've hired my cast and we've been through rehearsal, it keeps changing. Like every day there are new things we find, we cut out, we change. And that's the beauty of theater, is it's intensely collaborative. So I've had many different minds, so much creative and intelligent energy behind this project that has helped me a great deal.
Mm-hmm. I know some of your research has involved connections between Shakespeare and Montana from some of the earliest days. So are there reasons why Shakespeare is particularly appropriate, do you think, to impart Montana themes? And just maybe in general, how important is place in Shakespeare, place and geography as part of the framework of the play or even into the themes of a play?
Well, place is absolutely essential. And there's sort of two different parts of that question that I'd like to answer. So the first one is about the resonance of Shakespeare in Montana. I just finished writing a book called Shakespeare in Montana. It's going to be published in about 6 months. And my argument is, yes, if you go back to the time of the Mountain Men in the mid-19th century and up through the continued popularity of Montana's Shakespeare in the Parks, what you see over and over again is what I've been referring to as a love affair that people in the Northern Rockies seem to have with Shakespeare. And I think there are many reasons for this, but one thing that I keep coming back to is that this state, this place is so vast, so wide open and full of diversity and possibility, and especially people's connections to their landscapes. And I think that Shakespeare, being the most popular writer really of all time, is also huge and vast and expansive enough that people can adapt him, talk about him, change locations to any time period, to any place. And those words that he wrote can always speak to people. And I think that Montana's landscapes are the same. Like, people have these romantic notions of big sky country, but it might sound like a cliche, but it constantly engrosses people. And that's across the state, like whether they're in the mountains or whether they're in the plains of eastern Montana, whether they're up on the High Line or down towards Yellowstone Park, there's always something about the land and the connection to the land that I think is especially important in Montana. So when I think about adapting Shakespeare to this place where I live and this region where there's so many places that I've fallen in love with, I think the notion of taking Shakespeare into place is, it works so well. And I think that's because Shakespeare himself was attached to his own place and his own landscapes. Most of his contemporaries were actually from London and they were very urban in their insights. Shakespeare came from a rural village in Warwickshire, Stratford-upon-Avon. Because of that, his plays are infused with all of these references to trees and to brooks and to streams and, you know, really the flora and fauna explode around the edges of so many Shakespearean plays. And I think that's what makes an adaptation of Shakespeare so fertile in Montana.
Mm-hmm. For those who don't know the play, and that would include myself, can you say a little bit, by way of synopsis, how place comes into this play and what happens, just in brief outline?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start with the Shakespeare Middleton original, just to give you a sense of it. So it's about a wealthy man named Timon who throws lavish parties, showers his friends with gifts, and he's basically buying their friendship. And we find very early on in the play that he has long since exceeded his limits, and he's throwing all of these parties on credit. So when the debt collectors come around and say, you need to repay all this money, Timon thinks that he can call on these friends that he's been treating so nicely over the years, and they immediately shun him and say, no, we can't help you, we don't have any money. You shouldn't have run up all these debts anyway. Timon is so hurt and feels so betrayed by this that he leaves Athens, he goes to the wilderness, declares himself a misanthrope, and says he's going to have nothing to do with humanity anymore. He's digging in the earth, hoping to find food so that he can eat, and in this great ironic twist, he instead digs up a treasure of gold. He says, I don't want gold now, I want food. I don't want to be part of an economic system that always comes with hierarchy and hypocrisy and presents that are never returned because people are never genuine towards one another. And a series of people visit Timon in the woods, some to tell him what he's done wrong, some to offer him advice, many because they want to get their hands on the gold that they've heard that he has. He never does re-enter society, and in the end, not to wreck it for people, but he digs his own grave and dies. So it's a bleak story. It's also got a lot of very surprisingly satirically funny moments throughout it. But as you can tell from this, it's not exactly usual for a Shakespearean plot. It's quite a bit more allegorical than many Shakespearean plays. What I do when I set it in Butte is I'm thinking of Timon as a mining mogul, especially at this moment in the 1960s and 70s when the mining industry is starting to collapse. They started digging the Berkeley Pit, doing the open pit mining in 1955. And of course, there's massive economic problems that are in Butte by the 60s and 70s. The string of arsons, the burning of Columbia Gardens, the expansion of Berkeley Pit, and eventually the pulling out of Anaconda Company, which had become ARCO. So that boom and bust economy of mining in Butte, I think, works really well with the plot of this play, as does this notion of setting it at the time when the environmental movement was taking hold nationwide mm-hmm. and worldwide, really starting in the early 60s with Rachel Carson and others. And so I think that this is a moment when people started to realize that we had gouged the earth, that we were running out of that mineral wealth, that the richest hill on earth had now become one of the biggest pits on earth. And then by 1982, Berkeley Pit had, the pumps had stopped running. And that happened, strangely enough, on Earth Day, that they stopped the running of the pits. I still don't know whether that was meant to be appropriate or ironic or what that was. But I think that that time period and the placeness of Butte and everything that's tied together with mining and both its benefits and its drawbacks and its economic power, all of that maps, I think, incredibly well on Timon of Athens. So that's why in my world, it's become Timon of Anaconda, which is very intertwined with the place of Butte and that whole region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems very clear how this can be a cautionary tale about how we should be better stewards of the bounty of nature around us. But does the play also suggest any kind of solutions or ways forward, or how people can react to maybe mitigate that kind of disastrous future that might await us? Does Shakespeare do that at all, or that's something that maybe your adaptation would address?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for Shakespeare and Middleton because I'm not quite sure what the ending of their play is doing. I was talking to my graduate students about this last night, and there were so many questions about the ending of that play. But you're entirely right that my adaptation, I'm working very hard and talking extensively to my actors about how we want to make sure that the ending of this play is not just doom and gloom. So the last thing I wanted to do was to write a play and to take it to Butte and to replay the mistakes of the past and to ever claim to people of this region, oh, look at all these horrible things that have happened to you. Now you're on top of a Superfund site. Isn't that terrible? Like, everybody knows that that's a bad thing. Everybody knows that that's a huge challenge. So what I am interested in showing through this play, and I think there's a lot of material in the play that warrants this, is that there are ways forward. And I'm very interested in words like reciprocity. And one of the main characters in this play is a steward. So he runs the whole household of Timon. And he's the loyal steward. And he understands throughout this play things that the other people don't. Certainly the false friends are just hypocrites and all of that. There are also a couple other characters around Timon who are not necessarily bad, but seem short-sighted in their solutions or their approaches to the environment or to wealth. And the steward understands, and the other servants too, that we do have to go forward. We can't just lie down and die the way Timon does. We have to think, okay, now that we do have a pit here, now that we have a Superfund site, how are we going to clean things up? The steward, by the end of the play, is continually offering help to both humans and to the non-human world, offering food, offering love and support. So the steward character is a good steward both of humans and of nature. And that's not to say we get to go back to Eden or to Butte before we started mining, right? There is no going back. We all still need, in our modern society, the products that make mineral extraction necessary, right? So I'm not at all advocating a naive return to nature or a guilt complex or anything like that. I think what's important is that we all own our mistakes in the past, our continual need to extract from the earth what we have decided modern society should look like what those materials are. And so what are the ways forward? How can we still take care of one another in the human world, in the non-human world, and allow nature and work with nature to figure out ways that those huge problems might be able to be repaired? And I think of art as a way that we can think through these complex problems in conversation with one another.
Mm-hmm. In some of the publicity around the play, the phrase theater for change has been used. So I think you've addressed this in part, but how would you like people to react to this work? What would you like them to think about it or possibly do? And then also maybe in a larger setting, does theater for change seems to almost imply that this is part of a larger project? And do you have plans to do further similar adaptations or work with other people involved in that sort of thing?
Well, I think that theater for change, and certainly I'm not the first person to use that phrase. If you Google theater for change, there are companies all over the world that like that phrase. And there are good reasons for that. And that's that I believe, like many other theatrical practitioners and audience members, that theater is most exciting when it engages audiences and challenges audience to ask questions, to feel sometimes uncomfortable, and to figure out how we can change what we don't like in the world around us. I'm a huge fan of Bertolt Brecht, who at the beginning of the 20th century was saying, you know, we shouldn't do complacent bourgeois theater that's all about making us feel comfortable and congratulatory about our own position. Instead, theater should be edgy and raise those questions that somehow we don't always want to face. And so I think that Shakespeare is best because he asks so many questions throughout his plays. if he had answers and those answers were just kind of written into the end of every play, he wouldn't be so popular 400 years later. It's that open-endedness and that questioning that really makes Shakespearean drama alive and appropriate for all of those adaptations and continued revivals and restagings in different eras, in different places, because those questions continue to be open-ended. So to get back to what you were asking, what I most hope is that people come see Timon of Anaconda and they get in conversations with one another. They ask questions. I don't want them to think, oh, Minton had the answer at the end of this, and that was not a very useful answer, and then walk away. I want them to be challenged, and I want them to ask me questions, the actors, each other, so that the conversation can continue. And what I would love in my future research and artistic endeavors is to take scripts like this into different communities, not as a fully polished product that I then plop down into a community and say, see, I have a play about your region. Instead, I would love to workshop these in individual regions and get people to tell me, how does this play speak to you? What do you think your own most pressing environmental concerns are? How can different sides of some of these issues speak to one another? How can art become a forum for bringing diverse constituents together, talking and creating imaginative space for further discussion? That would be the dream, is to go forward and do things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, you've anticipated one of my questions, but I was going to ask what you envision for the future of this play. You have a performance in Butte, a performance in Bozeman. Are there going to be future performances, or do you anticipate that it will mostly be used in an educational way, as you've been describing, to workshop at schools or with groups, or how do you propose to move forward? Or is that something you're not thinking about at this point in time?
Well, I mean, I do think about it sometimes, because I've also had several people write to me and say, oh, this play looks great. I can't be here this weekend. Is it going to be done at a time in the future? It's hard to know, because part of it, I'm able to do this play at all because of grant funding from MSU. So whenever you put on an artistic production, it does cost money, even though, and especially because I'm having free performances in this kind of very public way. So part of it is whether I could have funding and get this great cast or a similar great cast together at some point in the future. Depending on how things go this weekend, maybe we would remount it at some point in the future. But regardless, I am interested in the educational outreach and bringing it to other communities. And seeing what that might look like. Like, I'm very interested right now in what this play would look like in Libby. Mm-hmm. That's when you think about the environment, the negative environmental legacy of extraction and production for the modern world. Libby is obviously another place in Montana that has been hurting for a long time, and that I think it would be really interesting to see what the members of that community would think about this play and how they would engage with it. There are also many other Shakespearean plays that speak to environmental concerns and that I think that I would be really interested in adapting and entering into conversation with those as well.
On a more personal level, could you say something about how Shakespeare is important in your life? Are there ways you view the world that have been influenced by all of your work with Shakespeare? Are there things that you do differently because of your reading? Can you say anything about Shakespeare in your life?
Wow, Shakespeare seems to run my life. I've, of course, all throughout graduate school and through my career as a professor, and I've been here now over 13 years at MSU, teaching Shakespeare and his contemporaries. And I do believe that there is, people always say to me, is Shakespeare the best writer of all time? And I don't even know how to answer a question like that. Like, a lot of that's aesthetic judgment and preference. But I do think that for me, when I order my life, I often do rely upon characters and metaphors and turns of phrase from Shakespeare when I try to make sense of things, happy things, tragic things, points in my life or other people's lives that are difficult. And I think the beauty of Shakespeare is that there's so much wealth there. There's so much in the originals that you can use and pull out and apply to life situations. So I love that. Mm-hmm. But maybe what I love equally, or even more sometimes, is that Shakespeare was a single author who lived during a particular point in 16th and 17th century England. But I, as I say in my book, Shakespeare in Montana, there's also a Shakespeare that's in quotation marks, because that's not just a particular guy who lived during that time period, but 400 plus years of conversation about those plays. And so I love that I feel like I'm part of a very smart, historically deep and broad conversation that's been taking place for centuries. And that is so vastly more expansive and important than just one person. It's everything that's happened since then and continues to happen. So it's all those minds working together that I just find continually inspiring. And I love whether I'm talking to theater practitioners or colleagues in the field or to my students or to Shakespeare enthusiasts in audiences. I love hearing what everybody has to say about Shakespeare and what it means to each of them, because that's just, it's vibrant, it's alive.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would like people to know, either about Timon of Anaconda or about Shakespeare?
I guess for people who are listening before the performances take place, I just want to reiterate that the Saturday performance is on September 7th, is at 3 o'clock p.m. in Bozeman at Story Mill Silos, which is a great post-industrial site, which is very appropriate to Bozeman. And the Sunday performance, September 8th at 3 p.m., is in Butte at Foreman's Park at Mountain Con Mine Yard. These performances are free of charge. They do have rain locations right on site, so people should come even if it's raining, which it might be on Sunday. And it's a chance, sort of like Shakespeare in the Parks, where you get to come in for free, but you should bring your own chairs. And I just hope that people can come and watch this production and see what you think and see what kind of conversations might ensue.
All right. Well, once again, thank you very much for sharing your ideas, thoughts, and information about Shakespeare.
Thank you.
Good luck with your project.
Yes, appreciate it.